This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. In the immortal words of Al Pacino, my eyes see Oppenheimer. My guest's eyes have been on Oppenheimer since, like, what, July, when he started talking about this being a sure thing to win Best Picture. And many of you wanted me to catch up with Awards Watch Ryan McQuaid after last week's prediction episode. And here he is. 7 Oscars for Oppenheimer. Ryan, how are you doing?
R-B-R-B-R-B. I'm really good. I may sound low, but I'm just tired. I'm at South by Southwest, but I'm so excited. I'm so excited by this. This is, the more I've thought about this win, the more I'm excited about it, and the more I think it's a special winner. It really is.
Christina. Tell me what it means that this particular movie, not just for you, I know we make some fun over your adoration for the movie, which is quite true, but what in sort of film history, what does it mean that Oppenheimer won Best Picture and Nolan won? And
I think that, well, the reason why I love the film is not just because I do love the film, and why I love the win is because I love the film, is because I also love what you're asking, the historical context behind this and what this means for the future of cinema. This is one of the highest grossing films to ever win Best Picture. I believe it's like in the top 5. You're talking about an enormous gamble by Donna Langley in Universal to give Christopher Nolan $100 million to make a 3-hour, one explosion, no CGI, walk and talk about the man who came up with the atomic bomb. And so that's an enormous, and also, while I love Cillian Murphy, oh, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that, Oscar winner Cillian Murphy, he's not a name that's been above the marquee in a big film like this before. Sure, he's had Peaky Blinders, but yeah, I mean, it's Netflix, how do you quantify viewership, right? And so you surround him with an enormous cast, you know, Emily Blunt, Oscar nominee, Matt Damon, previous winner, Kenneth Branagh, previous winner, Gary Oldman, Rami Malek, Florence Pugh, Josh Hartnett, the list goes on and on and on, and Robert Downey Jr., now Oscar winner Robert Downey Jr. And you come up with this movie that then also had to go up against Barbie, which was then the film of the summer. And that movie makes $1.5 billion. So you think, right? Because movies eat each other alive, it seems like. Oh, well, audiences are clearly just going to choose the movie about the doll and the comedy and the easy breezy film of the summer. It's not about like, oh, girls want to watch Barbie and guys want to watch Oppenheimer. It's about, that's kind of an easier film to digest in the middle of the summer. It's less than two hours. You can have fun. It's the perfect summer entertainment. And audience said, we can watch both. We can watch it in 70mm, which is an enormous thing for directors in this industry to know that that theaters will back 70mm screenings, 35mm screenings, 70mm IMAX screenings. New lenses were created for the IMAX camera for this, so you know that they're all going to be using that. This is a forward moving event in cinema, and we need blockbusters and directors to make these kinds of movies, and they need to be successes, and they need to be celebrated if they are these successes, because this is a culmination of a man's career, a generational director And that was the most interesting thing about the telecast, is the winners reflect a shift, I believe, that is happening in the Academy. It's more international. Yes, we've talked about that, but it is admiration for directors that my generation, and maybe people just slightly older than me in their 40s, have started to appreciate. You're talking about Jonathan Glazer, Hayao Miyazaki, Wes Anderson,
Yes,
you
it's
know,
definitely a
and
shift.
Christopher Nolan, and then these new voices that they find to be very interesting in provoking new discussion, like a Cord Jefferson or Justine Triet, you know, these or Yorgos Lanthimos. And so
Yeah,
when you look
Scorsese
at the
and these people felt like the old guard. I mean, we honor them very much, but it felt like something else at this particular telecast.
it does, and I mean, even look at Spielberg last year. You know, there is admiration for them. There's no question about it. There is respect to the highest order. But in terms of overwhelming support, if you're putting them up against new, exciting, forward-pushing directors like the Daniels, like Christopher Nolan over
Bong
these last couple
Joon-ho.
of years, or Bong Joon-ho or Chloe Zhao. And you know, you can throw in a, you know, Coda in there, but then you also have Jane Campion, who's you know, had a fantastic film that year too. But yeah, I think that it's a shift. We've wanted a younger Academy that's passion based, and these wins show passion as well as also undeniability in terms of being the best in their field. You look at most of these winners, you can't really argue them. Like, you can be disappointed at some, and we'll talk about those obviously for sure, but you can't argue that this might be one of the best crop of winners that we've ever had. And that's coming from a year of one of the best years we've had in a very, very long time.
Yeah, this passion thing, I was arguing in that on our last show, that I really felt like when I was talking about Godzilla, that this passion is shining through and that it will actually win awards, that it's a strong thing in this academy. But we'll get back to that. I want to hear what you thought of Nolan's speech. The
I mean, I thought it was beautiful. I thought that his whole speeches all year long have had a hint of humor, showing a side of him that, like we talked about in the last episode, that people think that he doesn't have, but he does have. He's not a robot. He's not a monster. You know what I mean? He's not one of these directors that, like, you hear about having abusive sets. All you hear is, oh, well, he doesn't have chairs, and he doesn't allow cell phones. Most people do that. They just don't talk about it. And yet, when everyone says all that, they then go on to talk about 20 minutes later about how much of a genius he is and how much they love working with him and that they would do it again in a heartbeat. Case in point, Cillian Murphy's worked with him for 20 years, and he was the one complaining about the chairs. But that's a luxury, right? And to be so humble, still being very British and saying, you know, history, you know, film history's been only just, you know, less than, you know, it's a little bit over 100 years old. And to him be a part of the fabric of that and part of this club of winners and be one of the best winners we've had in this category in a very long time. Was an enormous thing. And to see Steven Spielberg hand him that Oscar, if I know the Oscars they love to make a moment, and it can
And
blow up in
I'm a
their face
sucker for a
easily.
moment like
And I'm sucker
that.
for a baton passing from one of the most commercially successful, greatest directors of any generation to now the next great commercial successful directors of any generation. Christopher Nolan enters a status that's really on his own because there is no other director really like him currently working. You look at someone like James Cameron, for example, who's a little bit older, but definitely a contemporary. he is making Avatar movies the rest of his life. And that is where he is content in doing so. Spielberg is towards the end of his career. Scorsese is at the end of his career. Nolan is the most recognizable, bankable director in brand in cinema. And whatever he does next, you cannot doubt the amount of money you give him for a budget. And you can't doubt that it's probably going to make $600 to $700 million for the industry. And that's honestly crazy, because you have people that they do the kind of trajectory that he's done. You look at someone like Denis Villeneuve, for example. Villeneuve had a massive flop in Blade Runner 2049. And they've been slowly giving him these Dune movies. Like, they gave him one before they gave him the next one. So it's not as simple as, you know, who's going to be the next one? Because he's kind of just one of a kind.
And I want to shout out that it was lovely to see his wife and producer Emma Thomas get her best picture.
I think that she has craftively become one of the best producers in business. And she is, I made the little joke last episode, but I do believe it. It's like when you see the photo of him standing behind her and she's the one making the best picture speech, and it's got nothing to do with him. He did not speak a single word. I'm like, oh, so he may be the director, but the real pants of the operation, the real person that's running the oppy train is Emma Thomas.
That's right there.
She's the Alma to his Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the artist. He's great. But like, okay, yeah, honey, I've got this. Without her, nothing happens. And it's just so great to like see the admiration of these two great artists and collaborators, but also this couple. And it's an enormous task to make the movies that no one wants to make. This is not an easy movie to pull off.
No,
they don't pull them off every other day, and pull them off to the success that it had here. So, yeah, hats off to her. I mean, she looked elegant the night of the Oscars, and it just made me very happy, because
yeah, me too.
For my generation, we've seen the names produced by Emma Thomas and Christopher Nolan and directed by Christopher Nolan for years, and to see them celebrated, it was very, very special.
We are going to get into some more things here, bests and worst and moments from what I think both think was a pretty good show, actually. I had a great time. I'll encourage you all to listen to Awards Watch. You guys did a really in-depth recap of everything, but we're going to get into some moments here. So besides Oppie, Ryan, what was some of your most exciting wins?
Most exciting wins? Oh, well, obviously, I think one of my most exciting wins was Hayao Miyazaki winning his second Oscar for The Boy and the Heron. I picked Spider-Verse. I think most of us did just after that PGA win. And I really wanted that to happen. It's one of my five favorite films of the year. And Miyazaki, whether it is his last film or it's his second to last film or whatever, I want Hayao Miyazaki to win everything, you know what I mean? So but yeah, I love that. I mean, the Godzilla minus one.
Oh, so
I good. Was thinking of you, Christina. I was like, oh my god, Godzilla minus one.
Passion.
I
was so happy. I loved the speech. I mean, it was amazing, the whole thing. Did you see their shoes?
Oh my god, their shoes were incredible. Like the claws and that the little gold Godzilla's up there with them, you know, it was like, you know what, those are just special wins that you hope that the Academy is cool enough to do, like the Zone of Interest winning sound.
Oh, Johnny, but I was so happy for that too. I mean, it's Oppenheimer has amazing sound, but the sound design that they made in Zone of Interest is the movie and is what is making us feel what we're feeling in our gut. And I was so happy that people had sort of heard the story of their work so that they could realize and actually vote for this.
Yeah, and they and well that they actually watched the film, because if you watch The Zone of Interest, and I love Oppenheimer sound too, it's such a big part of that, but if you watch The Zone of Interest and you don't give it best sound, I mean, good God, didn't there's that it
You
goes to
didn't get the
down,
movie then. I mean, you
you
didn't.
didn't get the movie, you're down voting all Oppenheimer down the way then at that point. So kudos again. I can't believe I keep giving the Academy kudos this week. It's been crazy. On watching the films and understanding what is the best in those kind of categories.
How about unexpected wins? What say you about Emma Stone, Lily Gladstone, that scenario? It wasn't completely unexpected. I
It
mean,
wasn't
this
completely
was the
un
race of the actors' categories, but still, I think most of us were leaning Lily Gladstone.
So I know I was on your podcast and we did our predictions podcast over at Awards Watch. And I picked Lily Gladstone. And I ultimately picked her on the morning, but I did tell Sophia Simonella, our associate editor, I have the text to prove it and everything. I said, I know I'm predicting Lily, but she's not going to win. I said, she's just not going to win. And Sophia goes, why? I said, I don't think she's got enough. Not enough screen time. Not that I think she's supporting, like some, and I'm sorry, Christine, I have to say it, a bullshit article out of Variety, by their awards editor. Because I think that,
Yeah, that
I
she
mean,
should
the
have
op,
run for supporting, which is quite
yes,
weird. I mean, in terms of
I mean,
Davine, who's been winning everything.
it's problematic for both, for many reasons, and speaks to the vileness of women of color and how they are looked at and treated upon in this industry. From the optics standpoint, you're then saying one of the biggest celebrated winners of all time in that category would easily be replaced by another woman of color, and then assuming another white woman like Margot Robbie would take that place, and we would have all five white women in that category. It was completely unethical. Also, then you think about category fraud is a known thing for many people, but it's never stopped male winners like Anthony Hopkins for Silence of the Lambs winning actor, or Timothy Hutton winning supporting actor in Ordinary People. It's throughout the history of the Academy. And so to say, well, she should have just gone supporting and she would have won and we wouldn't have had a problem. No, because then Divine Joy Randolph wouldn't have had a win. So it's disrespectful, and short-sighted. And now to the actual win itself, it's not surprising. It's not surprising because Poor Things had a very passionate following within the Academy. The international vote seemed to be big, and it's crossover with BAFTA in 18 categories, I believe. It crossed over with BAFTA, which is an enormous crossover, which is very similar to the 2020-2021 year with No Man Land, where it crossed over very similarly, and we have this pendulum swing now back and forth between BAFTA and SAG and the guilds. But also, it just means too that sometimes that's just where the passion lies. It doesn't have to be just, well, if BAFTA went with it, then that means that that's how it goes, because that didn't matter last year with Everything Everywhere All at Once. But to the actress race specifically, I think that while I love Lily Gladstone's performance and I think it should have won, because sometimes my favorite performance in the category does not mean the one I think should win, because I do think historical reference and thinking back on the year is very important, and a moment matters. I think it does to some voters too. But I do think that the criticisms of Killers of the Flower Moon, its screenplay, its criticisms by some of having too much focus on Leonardo DiCaprio's character, having not enough focus on her and the Osage, and the film's length and inaccessibility by others, I think that that's what really caused it to be Emma's, a movie that she produced and put together, and people seem to really respond. And it's a very good performance by an actress that is very beloved. She is now got it's two Oscars. A
brave performance. I mean,
very much so. And a brave kind movie of also, to produce. Another performance too, that if you're an actor, you might want to do. I mean, you might want to do some rewrites on it. Like for me, like, you know, you
too
might want to change some things up.
For you?
it's some of the messaging. It gets a little muddled. I would have, you know, maybe another actress puts maybe a female writer in there for some perspective on that film for sure. But I think the same thing could be said for Killers of the Flower Moon. Is it a bad win? I wouldn't call it a horrible win, in terms of the performance, but in terms of, is it deflating, to see that moment for Lily Gladstone, you know, not happen? Absolutely. And so it is the kind of realization at the end of the night is that while this Academy, like I said, is changing and being different, this category continues to be a problem because women of color seem to always come up short.
Emma did feel stunned and humbled. And
she did not look like she was going to win that. I clearly think she thought Lily Gladstone was winning that Oscar.
And under the circumstances, did a really nice speech. And so I think that's, I'm happy for her, but I do think she was stunned.
Oh, for sure. I think that she had told Kyle Buchanan of the New York Times before the ceremony, when he caught up with her, that she wasn't going to win.
But everyone like, says that. I mean, but maybe that was.
I think she means it. Yeah. I think between her reaction at SAG for Lily, her reaction and moment to Lily in her speech, as well as over at Critics' Choice, I think she understood more than others, just like Cate Blanchett did with Michelle Yeoh last year. She understood that this win is more than about her. You know what I mean? And that you can't take Bella Baxter away from her.
No.
You know what I mean? She's had that experience. And I think she sees that as just like, wow. I have one. You know? That's easy position for somebody to be in if they already have one. And I think, it didn't seem like, I mean, she was very gracious and accepting of it and everything. And she tried to put a speech together as quickly as possible. It looked like she was absolutely stunned and shaken by it. When she's trying to get up out of her seat, it was like watching Oppenheimer in the gym, you know.
And her dress is broken, like, and she's all
and everything. So,
yeah. What did you find like the funniest of the evening?
Oh, the funniest moment of the evening. There were two moments that I thought were the funniest, and had nothing to do with Jimmy Kimmel, and we'll talk about that later. I thought the exchange between Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt about the Barbenheimer crossover, Fall Guy crossover, was absolutely hysterical, because it is actually pointed a lot towards online culture and trying to make this rivalry between these filmmakers and these people that have worked together and love each other and have been very gracious to one another, and trying to pit this almost sexist rivalry between the type of two films that it is. So, like, you know, if people said, like, Oppenheimer's boring and Barbie's fun, it's like, well, what the fuck does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, you know, both are fun interesting and provocative and entertaining in their own ways. And audiences both, you know, went to both. And but yet in award season, Emily Blunt's joke was kind of what I've been saying all year long, which was like, you had your fun at the box office, but it's really not been a rivalry.
Step aside.
In the awards race, which is very true. Like every time Barbie's gone up against Oppenheimer, it's lost everything. Because it wasn't nominated in an original song. Of course, like, you know, be an interesting original song if it, you know, if they had made one. But yeah, and then Gosling going back about like winning the box office and everything and writing their coattails, which they did help each other.
Oh, it's, I think
and
so,
and that's okay to, and that's
the whole phenomenon. It's okay to say that.
Yeah, it helps being a part of maybe one of the biggest box office events of our lifetime. Like, yeah. And so I thought that was funny.
I want to mention Arnold and Danny DeVito.
Oh, that was really good.
So funny. And Michael Keaton and all the sort of Batman jokes that they did. They did that really well. And John Cena. Yeah.
John Cena showing all of John Cena. At least enough that you can have on ABC. And then speaking of Johns, John Mulaney doing the sound. If there ever was an audition for the next Oscar host, it was right there. John Mulaney would kill the Oscars if he was the host. He's so good.
And he's been doing the Indie Spirit Awards, and everyone's been talking about how good he is. And now this audition sealed the deal.
And he did the Governor's Awards.
Right.
This earlier this year. I mean, to make a joke about the absurd plot of Field of Dreams and it work. That's somebody that clearly does show that they love movies. Mm-hmm. Would watch the movies and wouldn't make like a nobody watch these kind of jokes as well, you know.
You know how many people I saw on Twitter that went and watched Field of Dreams today, like the day after?
Good. It's a good movie. It's a wild movie, and it's a movie of its time, but it's still a really good movie.
In terms of funny speeches, I thought that Robert Downey's beginning of his speech that he thanked his terrible childhood was really funny. I thought that he would be a bit more sentimental in his speech, which he wasn't really. I mean, it was a good speech, but it wasn't what I was expecting.
It was very disappointing. It was probably my most disappointing speech of the night because we were all kind of expecting him to go out of the show, but it was a weird night for him in general. You have the presentation of the five winners come out, and Sam Rockwell does like a quote from Tropic Thunder, which is like, okay, I don't know if I want to hear about Tropic Thunder. But he did a good job at presenting him. Tim Robbins goes up there and flubs and basically says like Robert De Niro should win right before, which is, whether that's true or not, because I would vote for De Niro if I had an opportunity out of these five, you don't tilt your hand up there, and it's rude if De Niro doesn't win, which he wasn't. Everybody knew Downey was going to win. So it's like, so then Downey has to go out there and be like, yeah, great job, guys, except the one flub. Like, you know, it's not like you don't want to get your Oscar in your moment and somebody went up on the stage and said, you don't deserve it.
Because otherwise, I really liked those five legends presenting the new. I mean, it worked really well. But that particular, I mean, Nicolas Cage was like one of the best things of the evening.
Ben Kingsley, the Rita Moreno.
Something happened here.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have Tim Robbins, I guess. Going rogue, but just read from a prompter. It's real easy, guys. But yeah, I mean, Kimmel's monologue, I know, you know, we'll talk about Kimmel more later, but he went after Downey and made light or brought up his drug addiction in his past. And Downey basically going like, it's on the nose. And then Kimmel doubling down on it, being like, is that an on the nose reference or is it like drug reference?
Cocaine.
And he's just like, let's keep this going and everything. It was a little disrespectful.
But let's Downey just say did you would, thank his the people that
I mean, there's a way of doing that for sure.
When he was down.
That's a way you can talk about it, but I wouldn't want the Oscar host in their monologue bringing up my drug addicted past and making light of it in jokes. It didn't seem like it played well in the room. And it didn't play well when I was watching it. It just seemed not, I wouldn't say mean-spirited, but just misguided. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be a night where we're celebrating one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. And we didn't hear, you know, I mean, Brad Pitt has allegations of being abusive to his ex-wife, Angelina Jolie. Nobody brought that up on the stage that night. Of course, I don't think we had an Oscar host. You know, Casey Affleck, the year that Manchester by the Sea was there, Kimmel was there as a host. He didn't bring up that. And so it's, and I'm not trying to sound over protective of Robert Downey Jr. He's a big boy, but that's not the time nor place. The Oscars are not a time or place to bring that up at all. And if anybody thinks that that is, then they need to evaluate themselves.
So you think this affected his speech?
I don't think it affected his speech, but I think it just provided then a weird night for him. Mm-hmm. Because you look at somebody like Divine Joy Randolph, the way that she was talked about throughout the entire telecast, it was flawless. Her speech was incredible.
She didn't finally come with the paper that you were talking
she
about.
She finally put down the paper and came from the soul. And when she did, it was a beautiful moment. It made me almost cry. And it made her cry when Lupita brought up her grandmother and the glasses that she wore in the film were her grandmother's glasses. That is the kind of shit I've been wanting all season from these winners, and especially her, if she's this monumental sweeper. Let's have some emotion. Let's have some retrospective. Let's see what this means to you. And when she talked in that speech, my heart broke all over again. And I was like,
Paul Giamatti there she is. Was sobbing.
Paul Giamatti was sobbing with his In-N-Out Burger cufflinks. It was a perfect moment. But for Downey, it was just weird. And then, yeah, I mean, he should have prepared something, but he wasn't going to, obviously, because it's like season's over. I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I think that the thing we're all disappointed in is him not really acknowledging his father and not acknowledging
quite the opposite.
You made a whole documentary about him.
Childhood. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that that's an offhanded joke, but like, if you watch Senior, he clearly has so much admiration for his father, and that he didn't bring him up this entire season. You know, I think that that's what we want, but then also we have to remember that some people just don't do that.
No.
It's their speeches. But it of the five actors, it was the most underwhelming of them.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
What speeches. About in terms of like important, or I mean, not important is not the right word, but political or like?
Yeah, I actually think the speech of the night, Christina, is Jonathan Glazer's speech for the Zone of Interest. I know that there are a ton of people, Holocaust survivors, members of Jewish organizations, people that identify as Zionists, who are angry and upset by it, and they have every right to be, because that if that's what they want to believe, I don't agree with their political stance on this matter, but I know that it's a very delicate one, and it's also a religious stance as well too. But as far as I understand, Great Britain has freedom of speech. The United Kingdom has freedom of speech. This country has freedom of speech. There were protesters in the street before that caused the Oscars to be late. because they were protesting about the ongoing genocide that's happening, the killing of innocent people on both sides, in this issue that needs to be resolved. I do not believe that it is the Oscars' responsibility to resolve these matters. This is for the president of the United States and leaders around the world to resolve these matters. So I do think, though, on the other side, to blame people that have got really nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? Like Christopher Nolan has no, you know, Emma Stone, you know, Cillian Murphy. These people don't have anything to do with this. Now they can use their platform to promote and hopefully get change done, but they're not the cause of this issue. This has been an issue that is long before you and I have even been born, Christina. But I thought it was a powerful message to send. It's very reminded me, not that it is the same, not to make apples to apples and say that it's sort of the same thing, but it reminded me of when I was growing up and the Dixie Chicks denounced President Bush for his involvement in the Iraq War and Afghanistan and our response to 9/11, and how they felt ashamed by the actions of what we were doing, killing innocent people. And the backlash to that was very similar. You know, their backlash was worse because they were women, you know, in an industry that's predominantly men and conservative. I think Glazer was brave in saying what he said, and it was necessary to say what he said to reflect on a movie that is about a genocide and talk about the genocide that is going on now. I thought that was quite beautiful, and shame on the Academy for not having it on their platform. If you want to block comments, you can do that, but it should be on the platform on YouTube for everyone to see. And I think the other speech that was very powerful was the 20 Days of Mariupol speech of an issue that's been going on for over a year. And you had Navalny in the in memoriam. This is an ongoing thing as well. And I thought both brought vitalness and a necessary, look into our issues that are really facing us right now, beyond just the frivolous fun that the Oscars can have. It can be a place where moments, you know, can change people's lives if said the right way and done the right way. And so I thought that those speeches were incredible. And I do not think they were controversial. I think that they were necessary and needed to be said.
Well, everything is controversial. I mean, it's like, I know you say someone,
you can't agree on anything nowadays, but like that is clearly, you know, not the problem.
But moving on to best moments. I mean, of course, I'm Just Ken was amazing.
I have watched that at least 6 or 7 times.
You, me, YouTube. And Marty Scorsese. Did you see how happy he was watching that? There's this clip on Twitter that's just amazing.
His daughter Francesca has been the life saver of my life. I mean, she has just brought treasure. Marty into the 21st century, and just him dancing to I'm Just Ken and having a fucking ball. He's just everyone. Martin Scorsese's just like us, okay? And no, Gosling's commit to the bit.
Oh my God.
It was extraordinary. It is honestly, okay, Oppenheimer won the Oscars. But once again, Barbie's right there and having maybe the most memorable moment of the night. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's as much as, I think Robert Downey Jr.'s speech has been seen 1.2 million times, the most of any speech. I'm Just Ken has been streamed on YouTube 1.3 million. You know what I mean? So it's wild. And the references to Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and Madonna and that's what we want, Christina. We want to see them embrace history and movies and fun, and it felt like an extension of Greta Gerwig's movie. Mm-hmm. And to see her with America and Margot in the front, like singing like it's a rock concert, and Emma Stone singing it, and then you see the Oppenheimer crew's into it, and Marty's into it, like, holy shit, like, you couldn't have asked for a better moment. And the other thing that it proved is that if Ryan Gosling, I'm going to say this now, this is a bold prediction, but the next time Ryan Gosling's nominated, I think he's going to win that Oscar. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the whole, like, yeah, he did the comedic performance and people loved it and everything, but people are going to remember that, damn it, this man is one of our finest talents we have in Hollywood. And he just showcased
triple,
perfectly.
Quadruple threat.
Yes. I mean, to have the other Kins up there, Slash, like Mark Ronson, all of it was, oh, so good. So good.
But one of the craziest moments of the night was Pacino announcing Best Picture. What
I see Oppenheimer. You know what I mean? It was like,
my eyes right. See Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. Hoo-ah! I see Oppenheimer. You know, it was like, I've read that it didn't play over well in the room. You know what I mean?
Was he supposed to say the 10 nominees, or was he?
From my understanding and reading it, which also, like, people are making this out to be like, it's La La Land and Moonlight too. Like, yeah. It's like, calm down, people. He's in his 80s. He said it the way he said it. We all knew Oppenheimer was going to win. There's no like shock to it. I think people wanted just like the 10 nominees said, and the Oscar goes to Oppenheimer.
He also has a new baby. He's been up all
night. Yeah, he's been up all night. You know what I mean? Like, cut Al some slack. And he also wasn't supposed to be alone. We were supposed to have Michelle Pfeiffer up there too, and I guess she got sick or something. But no, I think that he went up there. That's how they wanted him to do it. Because they did it with Ariana Grande in Original Song. They didn't announce the nominees there. They just went right into, and the winner is Billie Eilish. And I was kind of like, whoa, we're not okay. That was a little weird. Heard it played weird in the audience. Like, there was a half a second, like, people were like, did Oppenheimer just win? And then they realized it, and they did, and they got on the stage, and it was over. Mm-hmm. And it was and good for Al to show the card to the screen, and everybody saw it, and that's when people were like, oh, it is Oppenheimer. So good
I'm
for that.
I'm not doing the Warren Beatty route here.
No, I'm not having another producer come up and show it. So I think it was being overblown, but at the end of the day, you know, it's Al Pacino. Like, I'm not going to get mad at Al Pacino. Like, you want to get mad at Al Pacino, go kick rocks.
One of the worst moments for me was the In Memoriam, which I thought was really badly produced and completely just didn't work, especially for the viewing audience with dancers and musicians and really small text. And are we looking here? Are we looking there? And just not emotional at all. And also then all of a sudden, Andrea Bocelli and his son, and we're like, what are we looking at here? How are we supposed to feel? That was not, I don't understand why they keep doing that.
I think that it should just be instrumental. You have an orchestra
and
there.
Full screen, and we should
full screen. I just want to see, listen, it's an In Memoriam. Don't overthink it. Put the fallen people, the departed up on that have passed in the last year or since we've done the last Oscars. Put them up on the screen. Maybe if you want to be creative, Christina, play a track or two of somber music from one of the nominees. Like, play a track from Past Lives on the score that wasn't even nominated, you know. But let's say you play, you know, something from, I don't know, but I'm not Oppenheimer, because that's too crazy. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, play a score that's somber that people might know. It doesn't have to be, you know, like a pop song that you turn instrumental. Just do some quiet music. Don't have a singer come up on the stage. Doesn't need a song to be done. You don't need it's not a performance. It's an In Memoriam, for Christ's sake. Like, people died.
Yes.
Like,
and
come on.
Like, when they've edited a, a line or two of something that they say, the actor, you know, if it's an actor
Yeah.
that they're talking about, you know, work with the montage. Don't work with what's happening on stage.
Yeah. And don't forget people. They always forget people. And it's like, what are you doing? Like Lance Reddick, very popular actor. He wasn't even in the montage. There was a bunch of people that weren't in the montage. Famous people, not just actors, in their crafts, were like, what the hell happened there? So yeah, it was a complete. It was the one aspect I think of the night that, well, it was one of two aspects on the night that I did not think worked.
What was the other?
Well, the other is the host, is Jimmy Kimmel. I thought he was very in cruise control, most of the night. I don't think all of his dad jokes worked, as much as he wanted them to, and they kind of got a little tiresome. It didn't feel like Jimmy Kimmel. It felt like just a guy that was just, going through the motions. I don't think his monologue was particularly good. Like I said, portion of it I thought was mean spirited towards Robert Downey Jr. I thought some of the jokes were a little all over the place. It just didn't have, he had taken a year off last year or a couple years from doing, his back-to-back run from the Shape of Water year and in the Moonlight year. And so it felt kind of fresh and good to have him back last year. And obviously, post the slap, he had to comment on that, and that was good. He didn't really have any of that this year. He just had the movies, and so I thought it was a little less to be desired. I did like his evidently controversial, again is the other word, statement about that Trump said he was bad and that the
Oh, I like
producers told
that.
him don't do it, but it's like. If you know anything about Jimmy Kimmel, that's he's gonna do that. Like, there's no way he's not gonna
Well, I'm
do
so
that.
glad he did that
And
indeed.
he needed to do it. Yeah. And so yeah,
I'm not gonna agree with you. I thought he was gonna, for me, that's this old feeling I used to have with like a Billy Crystal or someone who you feel like he's going to drive this bus and keep us safe and be able to react to anything that happens. And I also, I mean, it wasn't a perfect monologue, but I laughed quite a few times and I thought his interstitials between worked. So for me, he worked and I'm thought the Trump thing was great.
Yeah, no, I think that I think that he's just reliable, but he's not gonna push the needle. And
No, he doesn't push it all too much. And
no.
hopefully if he does it again, now we want John
Oh,
Mulaney, of course, but if he does it again, he'll
yeah.
push it a bit more. But I still am happy with him as I like a reliable host after
He,
a few
I
years of
think that, I mean, yeah, the Amy Schumer. Regina King, Wanda Sykes here. It was just a miscalculation for sure. But no, I genuinely do like him. I was just a little disappointed, because I think people do dog on him, but I think if they did dog on him a little this year, it's kind of justified. But also, yeah, I mean, I would just like let's have Mulaney do it 1 year, Let's have Mulaney do it next year because it clearly seems like he wants to do it and is perfect for it. And then, yeah, and then you can bring Kimmel back. Give him a break because Billy didn't do it every year. He had Whoopi, there's Steve Martin, there was David Letterman. There were other people that did it, in between. You know what I mean?
All right,
You know what I
take
mean?
us out. Let's go to the last thing here. Best dressed.
Oh, you want to do best dress? Okay.
Yes.
Well, who do you have on your
Well,
list?
one for me, number one are the Godzilla shoes on the VFX team
Yes.
for Godzilla Minus One. If you haven't seen them, they're all over social media, so you just have to look that up. The whole crew had these fabulous shoes. Coleman Domingo looked fabulous.
Oh.
He was a bit more subdued than we thought he would be. I mean, he was actually in a black tux, but I mean, he just looked amazing. Yeah, who else? I'm not sure about Emily Blunt's
I'm gonna say
the straps that were sort of
that
looking
wasn't
like
the
a
problem I
sleeve.
had. That wasn't the problem I had with the dress.
No, you didn't like the jock strap thingy.
Yeah,
Yeah, that
the
was
what
weird.
looked like panties. Like it was like, what the fuck? Like I
It
mean,
was odd.
it was there. I was like, yeah, I was like, I was like, oh, Emily.
Well, she would
you
look
just
like, first of all, she looked like she was in a brace, you know, like
yeah
someone who has an
yeah exactly she did like
polar brace with this table on the top. And then
man, if I was just sitting there, I was like, this is just ammo for Eric to continue to just beat her up this season. And she earned it this time. There's no defending that dress.
And Ariana
I thought
Grande
like,
I did not like either.
No, I almost, I didn't, people are going to get mad at me for saying, I didn't like Margot's dress. I thought she would go with something more Barbie, last go round adjacent. And it was just a kind of like, it almost like what it was like a plum, it almost looked like, and it was just really subdued. And I was kind of, I don't know, I was kind of bummed about that. But
you know
I thought
who looked great? Greta.
Yeah.
Didn't
Greta
look great?
Gerwig looked
best
fantastic.
The entire award season.
I mean, obviously Greta Lee looked fantastic. You know, I did like Emma's dress. I really loved Lily Gladstone's dress too. I thought that they looked fantastic. Divine looked fabulous. And I did like America's pink dress, you know, and so I thought that they looked good. Bradley Cooper, Ryan Gosling, boys, I love you. It's the fucking, or Downey too. Guys, it's the Oscars. Put on a tie. Put on
Bradley
a tie.
Especially, he looked so casual next to his.
Bradley looked okay. If there's any shade to be thrown at Bradley Cooper,
not enough has been thrown this season, is what you're saying.
Everybody's standing for Cillian Murphy's speech. Get your ass up there, and stand.
Oh,
I know your
that.
Mom's there. He did not stand. Carrie did. Everybody else did. Bradley was like, "I'm not." Look, he was talking with his mom, and it's like, dude. Stand up, you know what I mean? Because you would want it if it was the other way. Killian would do it if it was the other way around. So don't be like that. You know, that's why you're a 12-time loser. You know what I mean? You want to be 12-time plus a win later down the road. Be a little gracious. You know, I know you had Abbott Elementary after the show, but like, come on now. Like that was, yeah. And I just think like, wear a tie. A tie is not going to hurt. You know, even if it's just like an adjustable one, you can do it. Like, it's easy. It's easy, guys. You know.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 5 Oscars, what do you give the telecast?
I probably give it about 4.5. I think it's like a really good show. No telecast will be perfect because, like, you know, there were some flubs and overall
it
wasn't
early.
Like, you know, it did came in early. I like the time adjustment, gotta say. Somebody in Central Standard Time in the United States, it was nice to be done by like 9:30 and have the Oscar podcast done by 11, and then I can go to bed, like as opposed to being up at like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. So that was nice. But yeah. No, I thought that it overall the whole thing felt like a celebration of movies. And that's what you kind of, that's what you really want when it comes down to it. You want a celebration. You want the movies to hit you and impact you. And so it was a great year of movies. And I think in doing so, it had a very good Oscars to go alongside it.
I agree. And that it all embodied in those pictures of Marty dancing to Ryan Gosling and that whole thing. I mean, that's the picture of the night. So I'm going to leave you with one last question, Ryan, our great predictor. What is the next year's film that you will see this summer or whenever that you're going to be predicting as best picture coming?
Oh my God, you're putting me on a year of forward prediction? Oh my God. Shit. Christina. I would be more prepared.
Coppola?
No. We have to see if that's even good. I will go safe here and I will say Blitz by Steve McQueen. Because the problem with this season is we don't know what's coming out yet, and there are movies the problem really is that we're going to see some effects of the strikes, and there might potentially be another strike. These are necessary strikes too, folks. Just putting them out there. Like, it was necessary. We had the WGA and the SAG strike. IATSE will probably strike this summer as well. And those are necessary. But that caused movies productions to stop and get delayed. And so movies that are being filmed right now, if they get turned around and edited, will they get done? Like, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson's literally working on a movie right now. That's why Leo was not at the Oscars. And if you notice that, mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that had come out, but that does also feel like a director mm-hmm. that hasn't gotten their due. And that's somebody to keep an eye out for, you know, Mickey 17, you know, there's the I don't know if Bong will be back sometime later this year. There's always the international films. Like at this time last year, we did not know about Anatomy of a Fall. We knew a little bit about Zone of Interest, but we didn't know about Godzilla Minus One, and but we knew about, and also too about The Boy and the Heron. So I'm gonna go with Blitz because Steve McQueen's a former winner, and Saoirse Ronan, and I think that it's a movie we'd all been very much anticipating, and we thought it was going to come out last year and it didn't. It's coming out this year. So that's what I'll put my money on, since you put me on the spot. But I'm not confident in that yet. I'm not confident in that. I did not think Oppie was winning in March of last year, but July, yes, for sure. We'll see how the race unfolds. But for now, everybody can sleep and not have to talk about Oscars for 6 months, you know?
We'll be following it together. Thanks so much for jumping on. I know that you've had both Oscar shows as well as you're in South by Southwest and having so much to do. Thanks again for joining me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one last time, if I can, Christina.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.